Back together again, you and I, for a midweek Wednesday, October 12th, 2022 edition of Connecticut Today. We welcome Quinnipiac University Law Professor Anthony Minchella on to analyze the verdict in the Alex Jones defamation trial. We also looked at the latest revelation in Connecticut's gubernatorial race regarding a consulting deal that Republican Bob Stefanowski admits he has with a Saudi Arabian project. So what does the verdict here in this penalty phase of the Alex Jones trial mean? Joining us right now, Anthony Minchella. Anthony teaches at the Quinnipiac University School of Law to talk about this and the implications here and what the jury based their decision on and whether or not that number will ever be paid out. Anthony, hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. So this was the penalty phase of this trial, Anthony. So the verdict had already been sent down as to his culpability, Alex Jones' culpability, at an earlier trial. So the jury here, Anthony, was empowered to what? Decide damages, correct?
Yeah, correct, Paul. I mean, just want to say it's not culpability and penalty. This wasn't a criminal proceeding. So,
okay. In
a civil proceeding, there's two things that a plaintiff has to prove: liability, somebody's responsible for some damages, then the plaintiff has to prove their harms or losses, their damages, and that's what happened for the last 3 weeks. And that's this number that I went through the math twice was over $1 billion.
So. Is that number, how should I put this, Anthony, is that number realistic or was that meant to send a message? Would they send out a number like that if they didn't think Alex Jones had the assets? What's the thinking here? And is that going to be partly what any sort of appeal is going to be based on or not?
Well, your first part of your question about what was their thinking, right? I mean, we won't know what their thinking is. They don't have to justify. They don't have to write a decision and give any analysis. So it's based upon the evidence that they heard. Was it intended to send a message? I think the families were in the courtroom. I think that the jury was angry, right? Chris Maddie, who tried most of the case, was a former U.S. attorney. He prosecuted Alex Jones. That's what he did. And so I think it was meant to send a message that you can't recklessly disregard the truth for your own profits. And that goes to all of that evidence that was presented about how much money the plaintiffs believed Alex Jones made off of these lies.
So the overriding message here, this penalty phase, Anthony, and the previous phase of this trial, you know, a lot of people are bandying about, and I've had calls on the show today. Well, is this another definite statement that you just cannot say anything you want and guard that? Well, it's free speech. I can say that. I never touched you. You can't penalize my words. Is that a reminder that words do matter, in fact?
Well, of course, words do matter. And tort law, defamation and slander, there's libel, written defamation, and there's verbal defamation by words, that's been around forever. So it's not something new. But if you state a false fact that could be proven as a false objective fact, and it harms somebody's reputation, it's defamatory, and you recklessly disregard the truth on top of that, this is what you're going to face. So yes, words do matter. You can't go around saying anything you want. For example, one of my law school professors, you can't go into a crowded theater and yell fire. And so there's limits to what you can say. I don't see this as changing fundamentally at all the law of defamation or the First Amendment.
What about now plans for an appeal here? I'm not sure what the exact grounds may be for an appeal here. If you, Anthony, were planning an appeal, you were tasked with an appeal here, as much as you might not like to do it, what do you see here that could be, at least at first glance, possible grounds here, if anything?
Well, with the verdict in particular, there'll be some post-verdict motions that I expect will be filed by Attorney Pattis, Alex Jones's lawyer, motion for remitter, which is asking Judge Bellis to reduce the amount of one or more of the individual verdicts because they shock the conscience. So, Judge, there'll be months and months of that happening, and Judge Bellis will pay close attention to that and do the typical excellent job that she does with analyzing that. So that's the first step, is whether or not the verdict should be reduced by the trial judge. And then after that, there's an appeal. And conceptually, Alex Jones could appeal all of the verdicts, could choose to appeal only some of the verdicts. I think that knowing what his purpose has been and what Norm Pattis explained his purpose, which was equal justice under the law, it's not about the number for him, it's about the principle.
Anthony Minchell is the guest. Couple of more minutes with Anthony. He teaches at the Quinnipiac University School of Law. Anthony, in this situation, as we step back and we look at it here, how do they find this money? Is this where forensic accounting comes in? I mean, let's say Alex Jones is undoubtedly going to have to pay something. How does the court go ahead and find that money? And we've already heard rumblings of him selling property, shielding property. How do they do that in a case, maybe cases you've seen before on a much lower scale? How's that done?
Well, so in Connecticut state court, again, this is a state court action, not a federal court action, where there's much more available to a plaintiff who's trying to collect on a judgment. But in Connecticut in particular, if he has assets in Connecticut, which I doubt he does, but let's assume he has bank accounts in his own personal name or InfoWars in the business name with a national banking institution, you ask the court to issue a bank execution. And a marshal goes to a bank and executes on an account, freezes what's in there. There's a period of time where Alex Jones can try to claim an exemption. And if that doesn't succeed, the money goes to the plaintiffs. No wage execution here, but that could be done. But again, I don't think he's employed by a company that's out of Connecticut. So what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to register this judgment in other states where they believe he has assets or where he has interests in, for example, limited liability companies. Mm-hmm. They can get a charging against his interest.
So basically you're saying this is a long, long way from being settled in any sort of finality. Are we talking months, years? I mean, I know that's hard to guess, but what do you think?
Years, absolutely years, because there's going to be an appeal. Could be an appeal from the Connecticut Appellate Court to the Connecticut Supreme Court, or it could go directly to the Connecticut Supreme Court if the parties agree and the court feels it's that type of case that should go there. You're talking years, Paul.
So basically, Anthony, we're also talking two words, billable hours. That's what we're talking here, right?
Well, I don't think we're talking billable hours. The Kostoff firm does not bill hours to this.
Oh, okay.
They're out on a mission to do the best job they can.
Yeah, no, I understand that on all sides. Anthony, it's been great. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Anthony Minchella, who teaches at the Quinnipiac University School of Law, trying to settle this thing and square it out for us. Anthony, thank you. Hope to chat down the road. We appreciate it. Great job.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
Appreciate it. Anthony Minchella. On WICC. There you go. All righty. Let's kick it off here. Let's get it underway on a middle of the week Wednesday here on Connecticut Today. Let's get up and underway here. Let's get right on the horse. Let's talk about Saudi Arabia, shall we? And yes, the Saudis. And, you know, through the years, the Saudis, our relationship with the Saudis has been, scrutinized, looked over, looked through. As you look and scrutinize a regime that is a monarchy, Saudi has a king, it is a functioning monarchy, they make a lot of money with their crude oil and their energy drilling and refining. They sell a lot of stuff as far as energy products are concerned to the U.S. and all over the world. And we do a lot of business with the Saudis, and there has been what they call an oppo dump operation, opposition rather, research on the, on the Stefanowski campaign, obviously from consultants working for the Lamont campaign, and also some good writing here by Julia Bergman, Alex Putterman, and Joshua Eaton as they report for the Hearst, Connecticut media folks. And there's a big story today. We're going to start out with this because I want to find out. I have a basic question. Do you people care or not? Now, maybe you do. No, I get that. I understand that. Maybe you care. Connecticut Governor candidate Bob Stefanowski acknowledges work on a scrutinized Saudi-backed project. And the Saudis, I guess, have this mega, mega building project. They're going to spend how many billions of dollars on this kind of huge project that is some sort of modern rendition of a new type of living and working environment in Saudi Arabia. That's almost secondary to it. And Bob Stefanowski, and this was rumored a couple of weeks ago when Kevin Rennie of the Hartford Courant went and, you know, broke a little news, although I guess anybody could have found it, that Bob Stefanowski, since I guess 2018, has been doing some consulting work for the Saudis. Now, a lot of people might say, well, what's the big deal? I mean, let's look at it this way. And again, I'm not telling you how to feel on this. I'm just wondering how you do feel. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And we're already getting responses today to my Facebook question of the day. You can go for it on facebook.com/WICC600. Do Bob Stefanowski's business ties with Saudi Arabia matter in your decision on whether or not you'll vote for him? Once again, simple question. Do Bob Stefanowski's business ties with Saudi Arabia matter in your decision on whether or not you'll vote for him or you would vote for him? Don't know whether you're deciding not to. Maybe you're still on the friends fence. Maybe you're a dyed-in-the-wool Republican and you say, yeah, he's not perfect, but we'll go with this. And I want to get into this a little bit here because, and we'll get to the numbers momentarily and what exactly the deal is here. But this has been rumored for a couple of weeks. And by the way, how this plays in to something else I am warning you about. And that has to do with early voting. So there's kind of a secondary angle to all of this. We'll get to that momentarily. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And look, I don't know how many legs or how strong the legs are going to be on this story, but the bottom line is, and we'll get to the actual details that were unearthed and some good reporting by the Hearst, Connecticut media people, getting to a situation where Bob, I guess, was confronted with some of this stuff, and he spoke about it. Doesn't sound like he's hiding anything, and said, obviously, if he's, you know, going to run and win the governor's seat for Connecticut, Mr. Stefanowski said he'll, you know, jettison all those other business ventures. Here's what I don't want to see, though, and this is already I'm sensing starting. Oh, well, Bob Stefanowski, you know, sides with the Saudis. Well, hold on a second here. Now, the Saudi government is not the most progressive government on the planet. We know that. And you have the controversy about the death allegedly ordered at the highest levels of the Saudi government, allegedly, although they are denying it, of course, and they will till they go to their graves. The death of a Washington Post a contributor, Jamal Khashoggi, a couple of years ago. That was a heinous thing that was done, I guess, in the Turkish embassy or something like that. We can get into the details of that later. And look, the Saudis and how they have conducted themselves are not really what you would call super good on women's rights. I get that. I get that. But here's the way we've treated our relationship with the Saudis. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And we've cozied up to the Saudis for years, in particular now doing it because they look at the U.S. and look at a relationship with the U.S. as a buffer against the nutcases that run Iran. Not talking about the good, God-fearing, family-oriented young men and old men and young women and old women who live in Iran. We're talking about the government there. So listen, the Saudis scratch our backs, we scratch their collective back or backs because of the tension that continues with Tehran. We do a lot of business with the Saudis. I just looked the other day, I guess for 2019 or 2020, I looked this up before I came on here. We did, as of a couple of years ago, we did $40 or $41 billion worth of business with them. We just sold the Saudis, I guess, another weapons system for $6 billion or something like that. Again, because of all the rabble-rousing that goes on, threats and otherwise, from Tehran. So maybe you consider the Saudis kind of that. Maybe you do, maybe you do, maybe you don't. You say, hey, you know what? Everybody does bad things, even the U.S., and we have throughout the years, but it's neither here nor there right now. Bottom line is we have numerous business dealings with the Saudis. And even Bob Stefanowski is quoted in this ad, and I'll get to it in a bit. He says, hey, quoted in the story, he says, hey, I don't have to approve of what they do. You know, we can engage them. We can do business with them. It doesn't mean you're endorsing what they do. Although certain people on the left are suddenly going to start to say, hey, you know, Trump loves Stefanowski. The NRA loves Stefanowski. Stefanowski loves guns and he loves the Saudis. So I'm sure you're going to see that coming out in the next few days. Does this matter to you? Honestly, whether it's Bob Stefanowski or somebody else. In other words, here's the way I would ask it. If you have a person doing business with an entity or a country, and they're doing it legally, and they're doing it in a scenario where the very government of their home country, aka the U.S., has a military relationship with that country in question, like the Saudis, that does billions and billions of dollars. In business with that government, is the fact that Bob Stefanowski has admitted to, and we'll get to details in just a second, is the fact that he admitted to doing business with the Saudis, is that an important factor to you? If you're still on the fence about who you're going to vote for, maybe you're not. Maybe you're not. Maybe you say, listen, I'm voting for Lamont all the way, go Ned. Or maybe you're saying, hey, yeah, I'm a Republican. I know Bob's not the perfect guy, but I'm voting for him anyway. If you're on the fence, does this matter to you?